Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Friday, February 26th, 2016. TGIF, Al.
Well, yeah, I'm glad it's Friday.
Yeah,
I just wish it was Friday in 1975. That's the
yes, those years that kind of throw us for
Fridays or the Thursdays or the rest of it.
Just
it bother me. It's the year.
Those years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I'll tell you what I went and did. I checked the number of Silver Eagles that were sold for February, and we had a fresh record for Silver Eagles for the month of February. And it's interesting because February is, of course, a short month. Monday's the last day of trade, but we did over 4 million Silver Eagles for the month of February. And the next highest year was 2014, was 3.7 million. And, you know, it just fluctuates around those numbers. And, you know, it's funny, you go, I picked up the numbers from 2009, 2010, where a little over 2 million were sold. 2012 was just 1.5 million. And those numbers seem so small anymore. I mean, anymore, we're always close to 4 million a month for Silver Eagles, 5 million for Silver Eagles. Last month, we almost touched 6 million. So when you go back and look at the tallies for the month, February, it just seems, why? That's no silver at all, but yet, just kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. A lot compared to a few
it's
years.
A lot, absolutely. And I don't see it turning around. People have taken advantage of these lower numbers. I think everybody is.
Okay.
I think everybody is. I think big buyers, little buyers, I think everybody's in. Because when you do these numbers, you do have to have. And you know what's interesting, too, is when I call my bank and they put you on hold.
That's part of their job.
That is
part of the job description. You're gonna answer the phones at the bank, which means people come in. You put
them on hold. But my point, Al, is their recording that they play is about money. It's about gold. It's about silver. It's about currency. And so I just find that real interesting that they you know, and they don't play music in between. It's a repeat. Recording and for banks to talk about gold and silver, you know, you know, it's going to be the norm.
The enemy.
It's going to be the norm here in the future. And banks used to sell Silver Eagles, and not so sure if they're getting back into it. They wouldn't buy them back from people, but they would sell them. So I'm not so sure if banks are not heading down that path once again, was my point, Al. So gold today had a good day. It's still down 870, the New York spot price at 1225, but it was hit pretty hard earlier today. It was had a low of 1210, so came back at a nice pace. And we saw the same thing with silver. Didn't come back as strong, but we're looking down 40 at 1481. Platinum was down 13 at 917. Palladium was down a dollar at 488. The USDX today was quite strong, 0.68 to the upside at 98.08. Crude oil was down 11 at 32.96. Paper markets today couldn't keep their gains, but not a lot of change. The Dow was down 57 points at 16,639. The NASDAQ was up 8, 4590. The S&P down 3 at 1948. Saw a little action in the 10-year yield, up 0.07 at 1.76. The Euro pressure, 109. And all the European and Asian markets were up fairly strong, which I say time and time again, you're going to have more, you know, an up market when there are G20 meetings going on. So, of course, so we have that being held in China. And certainly your major companies, your major economies, Japan, China, Europe, the U.S., trying to figure out how to keep it going. And so it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Well, that's the eternal problem, isn't it? How to keep it going. You know, like your body, your health, your heart, whatever. That's true for people. It's true for governments. You know, it was true for ancient Rome. How do we keep it going? And in the end, they couldn't. There's a point to that in a sense. It's comical on one level or a little bit silly on one level, but it all comes to an end sooner or later. And that's how do you keep it going? How do you keep it going?
Well, again, you know, when people have their pension plans and everything else, you know, I mean, it's just another symptom. It's just another sign. It's your leaf in the breeze that, you know, the system isn't going to continue and we're going to see changes. And they're talking about inflation now. We're facing the strongest inflation pressures in a year and a half. And supposedly the Federal Reserve is welcoming this, you know, inflation. The cost of products from housing to medical care to furnishings increased in January. Gasoline prices, the primary driver of deflationary pressures the past 18 months, are falling, even at a slower rate. So they look at that as a positive. Inflation is quickly moving back up toward levels recorded during most of the economic expansion. So again, the price index for personal consumption rose 1.3% from a year earlier. And of course, you know, the Feds have their silly 2% inflation target. If you exclude food and energy, including gasoline prices, core prices still rose 0.3% from January from December.
Well, they got a ways to go to hit 2% then.
They still have a little ways.
They at least didn't slip down into obvious deflation that they're prepared to report. They're claiming that, we're over zero. We're in a positive range.
Well, that's if you exclude food and energy and so forth.
I understand.
So,
which reminds
which they
me.
Always, so when you have high inflation rates, they always exclude that to make that rate come down a little bit lower. And they still exclude it when they're looking for a high, or they include it when they're looking for a higher rate. But
it reminds me of Marion Barry, mayor of Washington, D.C., at one point talking about, If you exclude the murders, there's really not that much crime in Washington, D.C. That's, you know, everybody, we have this little tendency to exclude the things that are perhaps the most offensive to our purpose. We're not going to count the murders in Washington, D.C., and I don't know, we're not going to count some other things when we calculate inflation.
Well, that's kind of how they do. Now the big reports are coming out that January really wasn't that bad. Let's revise the GDP for the last quarter. And you know what? Things really aren't that bad. It's like, okay, yeah, just ignore everything that happened in January. And, you know.
I think another revision that we could do,
yeah,
we could declare that the South won the Civil War.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long time. I think it's the South's turn to be the winner in that particular war. And as long as we revise history, why not revise who won the Civil War? Maybe World War II. I don't know. Maybe Adolf is still prowling the halls of the German parliament. You know, there's a limit to how much revision you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about it is if you're going to revise these numbers on a regular basis, then maybe you don't need to report them in the first place. Why not? Look, let's hear what happened in Japan. If you can't get a straight story for 3-4 months, all right, let's not even talk about it for 3-4 months. We may not know what actually happened in January until March or April, but at least maybe we'd know the truth. Instead of getting some story,
getting all these revisions.
Instead of giving us a story in January or February, oh, look at this, and then, well, we'll give you the truth later. You know, it's like those newspapers where they have a headline that so-and-so has been indicted for whatever. And then later on, they do a retraction. And it's on page 32, and it's a little thing about the size of a postage stamp where they say, oh, never mind. How about just telling the truth?
Personal savings rate held steady at 5.2% in January. The savings rate has held mostly above 5% since late 2014. And it just cracks me up. You know, they talk about the Americans are using lower gasoline prices to increase their nest eggs. Well, I saw a number the other day where, you know, the average savings for the lower gasoline price is about $545 a year. I mean, it's $45 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really going to...
Yeah, it's a life-changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and again, $45 a month. And that's what they have.
I have an article here that's interesting to me, at least. Armed marshals arrest student loan debtors. Is the bubble about to burst? Could the student loan bubble be on the verge of popping? If desperate government action serves any indication, it may well be. Last week, 7 U.S. Marshals armed with automatic weapons. Good God. Came to Paul Akers' home in Houston to arrest him for a $1,500 student loan debt dating back to 1987. All right, this debt is nearly 30 years old, and it's $1,500. And here come 7 U.S. Marshals with automatic weapons to collect the $1,500 on behalf of the federal government. According to The Guardian, Acker isn't alone in facing the barrel of a gun over outstanding student loans. You know, there was a time when I remember that they taught us that one of the great things about this country is that we don't have debtors' prisons. Well, if they're sending people around with automatic weapons to collect $1,500,
I mean,
I guarantee you we have debtors' prisons.
I mean, wasn't there any explanation why, I mean...
Yeah, I got an explanation why. I think I know where they're doing this. I mean, the point, they do. They give us some more numbers, and then I'll give you what I think is going on. About 27% of student loans are currently not being repaid. That works out to about $350 billion that's not being repaid. The total student loan is about $1.3 trillion. and continues to increase, and 27% isn't being repaid. Some 7.5 million people with student loans are now severely behind in paying back their debt. Now, there's obviously no way the marshals can arrest 7.5 million people. There's no way that the government can jail 7.5 million people, at least not yet. This implies that the real object behind sending 7 U.S. marshals with automatic weapons to collect a $1,500 bill that's 30 years overdue is to scare the rest of those owing on student loans to voluntarily pay up fast. You can't send 7 marshals out to, you know, Joe Jablonski's house and tell him, go threaten that guy with these guns and, you know, blah, 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 do all the paperwork and whatever. It costs more than $1,500 just for that event, plus whatever time they dragged this guy off and apparently took all them off to jail. I don't know if that's absolutely true or not. But the implication, they go on to say that there are somewhere between 12 and 1,500 other students or former students that there are warrants out for them to pay their bills, and they're sending the U.S. Marshals around to collect them. Well, 1,200, 1,500 of these people out of 7.5 million is a drop in the bucket, and it's not going to collect much money. And if this particular instance is any, if this is any indication, it's not like they're going after somebody who owes $250,000. They're going after somebody who owes $1,500, for God's sake. I don't know. It's just, to me, this is an attempt to scare the rest of the students into paying their bills.
Well, you know.
And this is theater. This isn't government. It's not law in the sense we think about it. And I think the whole idea of sending, good God, 7 men armed with automatic weapons to insist on and to haul you off for not paying a $1,500 bill?
Well, you know, you hear chants, Bernie. Bernie, free school, free college, you know, and if you hear that, yeah, you're going to have people who say, well, you know what, I'm just going to quit early and hope and I'll vote for Bernie. And so, yeah, you could see them making that type of a, you know, so I agree.
Melody, we have free health care, so why not free education?
Well, I'm not arguing.
I mean, thanks to Obama, we got Obamacare. That gives everybody free health care, right?
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know who's
free,
paying,
free, free.
Just spending that money. But there'll be, I mean, that's the implication here. This is insane. And we can sit here and laugh about it, but this is the sort of thing you could expect out of Nazi Germany. Right? You're going to send the stormtroopers in to collect on debts owed the government. There's something that is fundamentally wrong there. This is a dangerous, dangerous precedent. I mean, if you, our government, where does it get off complaining that some people aren't paying their bills? The government can't pay the national debt. They have no intention of doing so. All they intend to do is roll it over with more debt and maybe pay the interest on it. They're not paying the national debt. They're the biggest debtor in the world, and yet they want to use armed goons to go out and extract $1,500 out of some guy they haven't talked to in 30 years. This is, I mean, this is a dangerous, dangerous sign, the sort of thing that it should not be tolerated, and if we only had someone in government that we could turn to who gave a damn, maybe we could do something about this, but who does? And the one other point about this, insofar as the government is willing to go to these extremes to collect $1,500, and they're actually spending more money on the collection effort than they are, than they'll ever get out of this guy. Well, if it's all show business, if that's all it is, it's just designed to scare the poo out of other people. The real damage being done to this country by these kinds of shows is considerable. It's not measurable, perhaps, but you got to wonder, how bad does it hurt the country to send out armed goons to collect $1,500? Is this what it means to live in the land of the free? They got free medical care. They were going to have free schools. Everything is free, including the marshals who come to your house, kick in the door, and invite you to pay or go to jail. There's a loss here, and there's evidence that the government itself is there, that at least implies the government is so deeply indebted and so impoverished right now that they won't do almost anything to get some money, which means if you've got money in a pension fund, or you've got money in Social Security, or you've got money in a bank account, you need to think about whether or not you want to leave it there, because there's people who just may think they need it worse than you do. And they're a bunch of gangsters and thugs, but they can get away with it because they write the laws. If I took your money, that's a crime. If the government takes your money, that's an economic necessity. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and we will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind listeners to visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, and of course you can listen to the program live and listen to the archives. We do have a caller, Jim from West Virginia. Good afternoon, Jim.
Oh, good afternoon. You made a good hit on a couple sore points. This $1,500 bill, I've got my second report now in the last 3 or 4 years of students with student loans who made payments, but they were not credited. And they struggle and struggle to get them credited, and they're just ignored. Now, this deal of the government not keeping proper records is becoming an epidemic. It's okay, so the government walks in and says, according to our records indicate, and if you don't immediately object, under precedence, which is starting in the 70s, the court accepts that whatever the government says is true. According to records, they say, oh, that's true. So it gets entered into the evidence, and they're thinking that this actually occurred when, in fact, it didn't. But, yeah, two different situations like that where I've heard where students did not get credited at all. Now, this is let me talk about me, myself, and I, which is lousy radio, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. Okay, some of you heard some of this, but for whatever reasons, I raise this thing about the International Property Maintenance Code. One of these days I'll do a little tirade on that because the second or third biggest scam in U.S. history on paper designed to roll out as tax revenues decrease in cities. And I became a magnet for these stories. Anyway, after I raised a stink about that, somebody filed two bogus tax returns with the IRS. That I made a gob of a bunch of money 1 year, then the next year made nothing. Gob a bunch of money the next year, and the next, in just 2 years out of nowhere. Now, at this time, I was living off my savings. The feds have access to banking records. They could have seen that, but nothing I have ever done has caused them to cough up these bogus tax returns. Based on this, they have filed. Now, they filed liens. Now, I'll tell you something. They don't file a lien because a lien requires court action. They file what's called a notice of lien. Now, a notice of lien is not the same thing as a lien. If it's a notice to a non-existent lien, it's totally 100% true blue bogus, and I know this. As a matter of fact, based on these fraudulent federal documents, the state decided that I owed them a bunch of money, too. When I sold my house in Charleston.
He must have been a rich guy. See, this is the problem with being prosperous. They say, he's got some money, let's get it.
Oh, absolutely. You're a target, buddy. Your money does not shield you. You become a target. But at the closing, I found out, well, the state says that you owe them $20,000. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. I said, they did not ship out a lien. They shipped out a notice of lien, a non-existent lien, and I didn't have to pay it. Based on this bogus documents, which I can't get them to cough up, I've had garnishes against my wages by the state and the feds. Wages, what wages? I lived off my savings for 13 stinking years. Now, not only that, but when I applied for Social Security, now I lived in a good-sized, normal-sized house in Charleston. I said, I don't need all these records going back to the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I pitched them when I signed up for Social Security.
Little did you know.
Little did I know, when I signed up for Social Security, they did not credit me with a number of years. I'm getting half the Social Security I should get. And I don't think they'll ever cough up these documents or say how much I made, the 1040s and Schedule Cs and S and all that jazz. Now, not only that. Huh?
Let me tell you something. I've looked at this business. I understand that we had common law pleading in this country in the beginning, and later we had code pleading, and there might have been another variation besides that in how things operated in the courts. But right now we operate under notice pleading.
Right.
Yeah, and very few people appreciate. I did some research on this, and I wrote a number of articles on it. And it turns out that the proper response, there are three possible responses to a notice.
Mm-hmm.
And procedural due process is preface, let me just say that procedural due process includes both notice and opportunity to be heard.
Right.
The opportunity to be heard is where you go to an administrative tribunal where you will be found guilty about 98% of the time. Sensible people don't want the opportunity to be heard because that's where you're going to get beat up.
Right.
And that means you have to control the notice. Most people respond to notices by, well, I won't say most, but many people respond to notices by writing back and saying, you're all a bunch of Satanists, and you're all going to burn in the hot spot. And the government says, thank you very much. Because if you respond to a notice with statements, the government perceives that as evidence that you have sufficient notice. Now they can take you to the opportunity to be heard where you will be convicted about 98% of the time. If you do not respond to the notice, you don't say anything. It is evidence that you have received sufficient notice. Now they can take you to the opportunity to be heard where you'll be convicted 98% of the time. What do? You ask questions. Their notice creates your right of inquiry. And if you have a right to inquire, and that's not my language, that's language I've picked up out of the law looking into this. If you write questions, they created your right of inquiry. Your right of inquiry creates their correlative obligation to answer your questions. If your questions are sufficiently insightful, they can't answer them. And they'll just simply drop the issue, right?
Well,
the answer to these problems with these notices, and that's what all of it is. Virtually everything with the government starts with some paper notice. That's not entirely true, but it's predominantly true. They send you a notice on something. If you respond with questions, intelligent and insightful questions, you can stop that notice. And the notice, the reason you can do this is the law says that the notice need not include all of the law and all of the relevant facts on which the notice is based. The notice is always incomplete, and that creates your right to ask questions. And if you ask questions that they can't answer, you haven't received procedural due process. They've got to answer your questions or admit they didn't give you procedural due process, in which case the court loses its jurisdiction and it can't hear the case.
Well, so I simply ask, can you prove this?
It's a little more than that, but regardless, that's the basic idea.
Basically, that's what I did. Now, not only that, but, okay, so I found out that for a number of years they did not give me credit for Social Security, so I'm getting about half the Social Security I should get. Not only that, but I was supposed to get a payment in January and February. I didn't get one, and I finally raised a stink with them. I was thinking, well, maybe who knows what, you know. So I waited until the second month non-payment. I called the Social Security office. They said, well, I've been having a hard time getting my mail because it got snowed in. It's a half a mile to the mailbox. But I finally got a letter from the Social Security. It says, you have not received two payments, and you owe us $3,600 because you were convicted of a crime and you've been in jail since September of 2015. Yeah, right. So I called Social Security and say, wait a second, I'm not in jail. And I said, so this is bogus. Look, I got two phone numbers listed, the Charleston phone book directory and the Spencer and Ravenswood Ripley phone directory. I said, I'm at one of them. You can call me there. I've got neighbors who can tell you where I am. I haven't even left the stinking cabin since December. But they didn't do it. They said, well, you're going to have to straighten out. You're going to have to prove to the state of Missouri that you're not in jail. And I said, no, how do I do that? I don't even have a phone number. Well, finally the lady looked up the phone number. So I called and got an answering machine. I called the lady back later and said, whoa, wait a second. First of all, you made the accusation. The burden of proof is on you. I said, I can prove where I am. You can't prove that I'm in Missouri. I said, not only that, but for whatever reasons, I'm sitting here. If you keep my money from me, that's grand larceny. And if you say I owe you $3,600 or else, that's extortion. I can prove you've done that. So she said, well, let me make a couple phone calls. And she did, and supposedly it straightened out. I don't know when, but I've got a power bill from hell I'm looking at, and I don't know if I have enough money to pay it. I'm getting right nervous about that deal. But the bottom line is the government does not keep good records unless you have some means of keeping records so you can do something. Like I talked to Social Security type attorney about this. Do you have records of how much you made those years? Said, no, I tossed them in the trash. So what I'm saying is, folks, don't trust the government. Anything. Now, these two student loans.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you think this is simply inefficiency, inadvertent, or do you think that this is something that they're doing to perhaps a lot of people just because the government is stretched for cash? And they come up with some cock and bull excuse. They might have thousands of people where they're telling them, oh, our records show you're in jail. Now, I don't think that's true, but I'm curious if you think that, if you catch my drift, are they just using this as a pretext not to pay some of their bills?
Well, first of all, I'm an enemy of the state. The International Property Maintenance Code is 1,000 times worse than eminent domain. That and the clouded title issues are the two second or third worst scams in U.S. history. But nobody knows about the International Property Maintenance Code. It's been on the books for 15 years. For God's sakes, read it. It's not that hard to read. Raw property theft. One of these days, I'll explain it all because it is shocking. But they came after my property on Oakwood Road, Charleston, West Virginia, $30 million of property, because somebody in collusion with the city government and a property developer, one of my 2 acres in the nicest part of town were condos sold for $250,000 a pop. And I had a 1916 farmhouse and two-car garages on the property, and they wanted it. Well, they got it finally. I said, I'm not going to live in Charleston anymore. But the bottom line is two reasons. First of all, I'm an enemy of the state, and I know that. Now, you guys have a voice on the radio. They don't dare mess with you very much. They've messed with me. Part of the reason I'm on the radio so much is that I'm more visible, so I won't get whacked. And I'm being serious. Dr. Stan Monteith one time says, I'm surprised they haven't killed you. When I explained the International Property Maintenance Code to him, and he wouldn't do a program on it. Alex Jones wouldn't do a program on it. It's one hot issue. But because I raise a stink about it, I'm convinced that I have been singled out. Number two, when I told the Social Security guy when I was signing up, I said, they didn't give me credit for that. And he said, it happens all the time. So I think they're strapped for cash. And I think they use
the lost record story as a pretext for not paying some of their bills. I suspect that. I don't have any evidence to support it. It's just one. It certainly wouldn't surprise me if that was true. It may not be true, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was.
It's plausible deniability. Oh, we just didn't know. I've got a little litmus test. I've got a little litmus test for any politician. This was this came from a reporter, one of the best corruption reporters to walk the streets of Charleston, West Virginia. I work with him. Very loosely, for 15 years. He probably had 100 people worked with him. But he said, here's what you do. You go up to a politician, you say, hey, have you heard of the International Property Maintenance Code? Why, no. And then you explain it to them. They consider your property based on what they call an unsanitary condition. The code official is the sole interpreter. Can you say Gestapo? They can say noxious weeds. In Charleston, West Virginia, $555 a day. For anything the code official says is not in good working order, like a dented gutter in my case, an unsanitary condition, 6 bags of grass clippings in my case, or any noxious weeds. They claim that there was kudzu growing up one of my garages. They were blackberries. So for whatever reason, $555 a day, every day is a mandatory misdemeanor and or a month in jail. That's what they hit me with. And I fought a tooth and nail, and I won. I finally took it to Derry Brownfield show. And then Butch Paul, and then Joyce and Butch and I did a show on it in 09. That brought a very interesting reaction from the feds. I won't bore you with the details, maybe sometime later. But the bottom line is very simple. I know I'm an enemy of the state. I know that. They've done. If I gave you all the dirty things they pulled on me, you'd be shocked. They say they
no,
send
I probably
out a notice.
Wouldn't be.
Well, they say
they've
been
at this for a while. I've been at this for a while, and I've heard stories, and I know of stories that are pretty amazing and pretty hard to believe. And it would be interesting, it would be surprising if you've got a story that I would find shocking. It's not impossible. I'll tell you what, we've got about 30 seconds to the break. You got something you'd like to add and close us up?
Well, the main thing I want to tell you is this. For whatever reasons, I'll bet you that the government's failure to keep proper records, intentional or accidental, is behind a whole lot of grief in this country.
Yeah.
So if you hear of them filing a lien, a good chance it's a notice of lien, which is totally
no. That's all it is. They don't ever file liens.
Yeah.
File a notice of lien.
Hopefully, other folks will learn that. Catch you later. God bless. Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you, Jim. Bye bye. We're gonna take a break for a couple more commercial announcements, and Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, Deutsche Bank. We all know the problems that they're having. In fact, they were one of the first ones to pull out of the London fixing of the gold. So we know their problems started a long time ago, and they're cleaning up their books. And maybe this is why they're coming out and say, it's time to buy gold. They're going against the elite. They're going against the central banks, but they're saying that gold is certainly priced very well. There are rising stresses in the global financial system, in particular the rising risk of U.S. corporate default cycle and the risk of a sharp one-off renminbi devaluation due to the sharp increase in China's capital outflows. This is what Deutsche Bank says. Buying gold insurance is warranted. And, you know, they talk about the prices. They were kind of off on their lows and everything for the prices. But they go on and they talk about gold being the insurance policy. Mm-hmm. And that this is something that you need and it's time to buy.
You know what that means, don't you? It means things are so bad that some of the bankers are even starting to tell the truth.
Hmm?
Mm-hmm. This is one of those things where, oh my gosh, a banker is telling the truth. You know, the end is near. Here's another article on Deutsche Bank. It's from Judia. It says European bank stocks are crashing. That's the headline. It's a couple of days ago. Deutsche Bank, Germany's largest bank, has plunged 36% this year.
Mm-hmm.
The stock is at an all-time low. Deutsche Bank lost 2.12 billion euros for the fourth quarter after making a 437 million euro profit the year before. Now, that's pretty interesting, right? It translates into something like they are losing five times as much this year, well, for the fourth quarter, as they did in the previous year. That's a big change. Deutsche Bank stock has been destroyed over the past year. Deutsche Bank stock has plummeted 46%, recently hit an all-time low. Today, Deutsche Bank jumped 10% after the company said it's considering a bond buyback program. The company hopes this will ease investor concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. You know, it's if Deutsche Bank is going to buy its own bonds back, does that really fool anybody? I'm thinking, oh, Deutsche Bank thinks its bonds are still valuable and they're good and they're solid and rest of that sort of thing. They're just, I think they're just slitting their own throats, and that does not, that would not inspire my confidence. Credit Suisse, a major Swiss bank, has plummeted 40% this year to its lowest level since 1991. Credit Suisse lost 5.83 billion euros last quarter after making a 691 million euro profit the year before. Again, they're losing billions this year after making hundreds of millions last year. Oh, about a nine. They're losing about nine times as much this year as they did, as they gained last year. Not a good sign. They go on with a number of these. Europe's crazy monetary policies are starving the banks of income. This is one of the things we've talked about on the program over the last week or 10 days, realizing that there may be a significant division between central banks of the world and the conventional banks that are in the various countries. We've operated under the assumption that the banking system operated as a single entity, and they had their interests and we had our interests, and our interests were being sacrificed for the sake of the banks. What we're seeing is increasingly evidence that the banks themselves, the private banks, essentially, they're being driven out of business by the Fed, by the central banks like the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan and so on, because the central banks are holding interest rates down next to zero and sometimes below zero. And the banks make their money by paying interest, and they are cutting into the bank's abilities to make profits. And the banks are screaming and saying, my God, you've got to stop. You're driving us out of business. So the headline is, you know, we've got European bank stocks are crashing. It can't be a good sign. And it's the sort of thing that it's evidence that the entire system is in jeopardy. Doesn't mean it's going to collapse, but it certainly indicates that it could at any time. We have problems with Deutsche Bank. Here's another one from Phoenix Capital Research. The headline is Japan signals that the end game has become. Quietly, as an aside in a speech, the head of the Bank of Japan, Haruhiko Kuroda, confessed that quantitative easing has little, if any, impact on GDP growth. The Bank of Japan began quantitative easing back in the early 1990s. All right? And they implemented ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, for the first time in 1999. We're talking about 1999. Here we are 17 years later. Thus, Japan has been maintaining ZIRP for the better part of two decades. The Bank of Japan also launched the first QE program in 2001 and never looked back. Currently, its balance sheet is over $3 trillion, equal to 65% of Japan's GDP. If the United States, the Federal Reserve in the United States, had a similar balance sheet, it would have to be $11 trillion. It's currently about $4.5 trillion. We'd have to be over two times greater to have a balance sheet at the Federal Reserve that was proportional in size to the balance sheet at the Bank of Japan. Anyway, this is why the head of the bank, Haruhiko Kuroda's admission that Japan has a GDP potential growth of 0.5% or less is such a huge deal. Japan is saying, look, the most we can expect is 0.5% the next year. Growth. Yeah. And that's the most. They're pretty much telling you it's going to be negative. I mean, this is, they're just pumping as much sunshine as they can under the circumstances. But if they're admitting that their maximum growth is 0.5%, they're pretty much telling you that this thing is just going down and going down and going down the pipe. Bank of Japan, Haruhiko Kuroda, is effectively the head of the single most aggressive central bank on the planet, admitting that no matter how much quantitative easing or ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, he employs, there's a definitive ceiling and a low ceiling at that for GDP growth. They're just saying, look, there's nothing we can do here. We're out of Schlitz or Saki. Nothing's working, right? And there's nothing more we can do. And we talked about this earlier this week. The Central Bank of Denmark, if I recall correctly, they announced that they'd hit the limit. There's nothing more they could do with quantitative easing. They couldn't do anymore. We are seeing an outbreak of truth coming from central banks and banks in general. Huh? Not all of them, but some of them at least are starting to tell the truth. They say, look, there's nothing else we can do. If there's ever been a bank that's too big to fail, it would have to be the Federal Reserve and or the other central banks. But if the Bank of Japan, for example, is forced to admit there's nothing else it can do, will the Bank of Japan also have to admit that it's broke and unable to repay its debts? If the Bank of Japan goes broke, who's left to bail it out? The answer is nobody. There's nobody there to bail out the Bank of Japan. And if the Bank of Japan goes broke, who's going to issue the yen currency? What will happen to the yen currency if the Bank of Japan goes broke and they finally have to, look, we can't do anything? If the Federal Reserve is forced to admit that it's gone broke, trying to implement an ineffective QE program, quantitative easing, of course, who's left to bail it out? Nobody. There's nobody there to bail out the Federal Reserve. If the European Central Bank, same thing. If they have to admit they're insolvent and they can't make QE work, who's left to bail them out? And the truth is there's nobody here. There are no forces around to bail out the central banks. We had a situation back in 2008, 2009, where people were scared to death that one of the major banks was going to go bankrupt, completely bankrupt, and Lehman Brothers very nearly tipped the whole world into an economic depression. But Lehman Brothers was nothing compared to the central banks. And there's a number of them that are just dancing around the edge of their own graves. And there's a hole in the ground, and they're betting they can jump over it and dance around it, the rest of that sort of thing, but maybe not. I don't know. It's just another one of the, again, leaves in the breeze telling us you better look out, better be careful, better make preparations, better do whatever you can to protect yourself. Because people in positions of power at the Federal Reserve, at the federal government, they're going to do anything that they can even imagine might work to get more money. And the story we had just a moment ago about somebody being raided by seven U.S. Marshals with automatic weapons to collect a $1,500 debt that's 30 years old, or nearly so. I mean, this is evidence of people that are losing their minds. This is crazy. This is insane. And the government has painted itself and us into this corner by adopting fiat currency back in the 1970s, pure fiat currency back in the 1970s. And they're trying to trap us even now, even get away from physical cash, where we have a pure digital currency. And the reason most people believe is because the government wants to be able to rob your currency by just throwing a little electric switch. Just go throw a little switch and it'll automatically rob your bank account or whatever, your Social Security account, or fail to make payments. Jim was talking about that from West Virginia. He was talking about they're not making payments. 2 months. You know, how can that be? They say you're in jail for the last, you've been in jail for the last however long, and he's not. How can you have those kinds of mistakes? Can you really believe that's a mistake? Or is it the kind of fantastic excuse that somebody's conjuring up as an excuse not to pay the bill that's owed you? Now, I don't know that explanation is valid. The idea that the government is intentionally creating a false pretense for why, the dog ate my homework, the check is in the mail, they must have got lost in the blizzard or something. Maybe they're just not paying their bills. And even if they are, and there is some innocent explanation for what happened to Jim and his two checks, the time is coming when everybody who's relying on government to put food on their tables, they're going to be in for a surprise. The circumstances, the financial circumstances for the government, the Federal Reserve, the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, China, everybody's in a bind. And inevitably, is it going to happen this year? I don't know. Next year? I don't know. But inevitably, as we've argued for years on this program, what can't be paid won't be paid. And the people that are relying on government, their faith, their confidence in the government is confidence that the debt will be paid. That's what the faith and confidence is all about. It's, full faith and credit of the people of the United States of America. Got to have confidence in the monetary system. Confidence in what? Faith in what? The faith and the confidence have to be in the idea that the debt can and will be paid. And I'm looking at it, I'm saying, that ain't going to happen. And I'm not the only one. John Williams, he's the one who really started this 4 or 5 years ago when I was first made aware of how great the debt is. John Williams pointed it out. He did the calculations on this. And in fact, John Williams, if you haven't heard him, John Williams is shadowstats.com. You can catch, he's on video. You can catch him on YouTube on various videos and the rest of it. John Williams is, a mild-mannered kind of guy and the rest of that sort of thing. He's not arrogant, but he's probably the most important economist in the last 20 years. And the reason is he did the necessary calculations. He sat down and did the necessary calculations to get us close to the truth of what real unemployment rates are, what the real national debt was. If it wasn't for Williams, we'd still believe in that the debt was really only $19 trillion and maybe much less than that. And inflation rates were, who knows, unemployment rates down 4.9%. Williams opened the door to the truth for us. And in doing so, he's had a profound effect. He's one guy in the whole world right now that I regard as a hero. Williams did some great stuff. In any case, we're out of time for the program, but make sure you're not out of time in your life and your financial affairs. We are on the verge of serious problems. Do what you have to do in order to be prepared if and when those problems manifest in a way we can't ignore. I'm Alfred Attisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams.